This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com, go to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack.
Well, why try? Forget about it.
Because I'm tired of not understanding things. Cops, mafia, butlers forcing me to steal something, which now it appears I didn't steal after all. It's all too goddamn peculiar, Tommy. Let me ask you something.
What?
How much does a new tuxedo cost?
Reindeer Goat Cheese Pizza. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack, episode 47. We are mining the depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, and I'm joined today by Mr. Brian Brief Him Snickers Ibbett.
You know, I may be wrong on this, but I think Almond Joy's got nuts.
How do you think about that?
Dude, that is... You're up way over our pay grade. I don't know how you come up with these things.
It'll make sense in a minute, listeners.
Yeah, I promise it will, but that's awesome. Also with us, Brian Butterfinger Dunaway.
Oh, no. I've been paralyzed with a dart. Wait, no. It just makes me twitch. Nope. I'm paralyzed. Wait, cut. What exactly are we supposed to be doing in this scene again? Oh, my hat.
You got any more?
What's sad about this will make sense in a little bit is the movie won't. Like, we're going to make more sense than the movie.
I think I agree. That sultry voice is, of course, Randy Five-Tone Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian. Out of respect for every other movie than the one we're discussing this week, and I mean every other movie ever made, I refuse to attempt to say anything witty or funny or moving or hopeful or cute or serious or apparently brief. I refuse.
All right.
Thank you.
Like it a lot. If you... couldn't tell from all of this what we're talking about, I wouldn't blame you, because it's a little tricky this week. Yeah, pretty obscure. But when we have obscure, we turn to Scott Fletcher for help.
Hudson Hawk. Half loopy parody, half action comedy, this Bruce Willis vehicle puts its star in the shoes of Hudson Hawk, a skilled cat burglar who times his robberies by singing show tunes. After being released from jail, Hawk wants to do nothing more than hang out in cafes. But criminal financiers Darwin and Minerva Mayflower, played by Richard E. Grant and Sandra Bernhardt, blackmail Hawk into one last job, stealing a Leonardo da Vinci device that turns lead into gold.
Gold, you say?
Blah, 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 blah. Sandra Bernhardt, nastiest freaking looking chick in the history of film.
No kidding. Yeah, that was one person that came out. I was not surprised.
Yeah. Oh, did she come out? I don't know. Did she? I didn't know that.
Yeah, didn't she? A long time ago.
Well, you mean come out as like an ugly troll that lives under a bridge and shoots fire from her eyes or what?
And that's not a slam on anybody's sexual preferences. She's just weird.
Nope. You know what? But it is a slam on trolls.
I saw Sandra Bernhardt do her stage show about 10 years ago in Austin, and it was one where she was basically raging against the vagina monologues, and she takes her top off and stands around the last 30 minutes of her show, you know, bare-breasted.
Yuck.
Yeah.
And I don't remember her looking as ugly, say, 7 years after this movie, as she looked in this movie. Like, I really don't, and I'm usually, like, if you're this ugly, like, your teeth and your lips and your nose are this ugly, they're just going to get worse. And so I'm wondering if maybe she got something fixed after this, because she was really awful.
Well, I kind of have a weird connection with her. It's similar to the one I have with Charlize Theron, which is I have a hard time with her movies, and people say, what, dude, Charlize Theron's hot, blah, 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 blah. And they're right, she is. But the problem with Charlize Theron is if you look at her and then look at pictures of my mom in her late 20s and early 30s, it's the same lady. Yeah, I think I did bring it up. So the kind of, I kind of have the same problem with Sandra Bernhard. Not that she's hot, because she's not. But she
looks like your dad in the late 70s.
She looks like my grandma. Totally looked like my grandma growing up. And even when she was young, like in this movie, she just every time she just spouts something out of that big, weird, toothy face. I just go, oh, my gosh, my grandma is pissed at me for leaving the light on, or I didn't feed the dog or whatever. And so it's hard for me to separate.
It's not really a fair critique because she's not supposed to be playing a pretty person. She's supposed to be playing someone who is humorously ugly. You know, like she wears these crazy hats and tons of makeup and so forth. And, you know, so she's supposed to be an ugly person playing dress up.
Yeah.
But my gosh, it's just jarring to see her in this movie.
She is. She's one of the three problems that I have with this movie. And I've already laid my cards on the table and said that that this is one of my guilty pleasures, that I do really like this movie. But I would consider Sandra Bernhard to be one of the three problems with Hudson
Just
Hunt.
Three?
Just three problems.
Okay, so hold on. Let me fill in the other two for you. For me, the other two problems in the movie are Bruce Willis and everything else in the movie.
Oh, come on.
It can't be that bad. So Ibbett, what are the two others? Because I'm with you so far on the Sandra Bernhard problem.
Andy McDowell. She's kind of always bothered me as...
Really?
As someone that I don't think can act very well. The only time I've ever liked a movie with Andy McDowell that because of Andy McDowell was Sex, Lies, and Videotape. And I think it was just because she was playing a version of herself.
How'd you feel about her in Groundhog Day?
That could have been anybody. And I probably would have liked it if it was anybody else. Yeah. I really like Groundhog Day, but I certainly didn't like it because of Andy McDowell.
That's interesting because I kind of had, it's been a long time since I've seen an Andy McDowell film. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't sure if it was me just saying, wow, she really phoned this one in, or if she always phones it in. It's just been too long since I've noticed.
I think she always phones it in because, I mean, tell me something about the personality of her character in Groundhog Day.
I can't remember anything about it.
She hates
hot chick.
She hates Bill Murray at first, but she likes him later because he gets soft and nice. That's it. That's it.
That could be.
That could be anyone.
That would have been Meg Ryan in that role, easily.
Totally.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
I thought she did pretty good in Hudson Hawk. This is probably the best performance I've ever seen her.
Oh, wow. Dude. Really?
You like her dolphin impersonation, do you?
I actually loved that.
Oh, no, you didn't.
You're right. I didn't like that part. But the rest of it, she really sold me. She was the only person that seemed to be acting in this movie. Well, there is one other person, Danny Aiello. Aiello.
Electric Light Orchestra.
He was brilliant, but I thought she did pretty good because, I mean, she was totally playing it one way, and then she went to being a nun. And how do you pull that off? I mean, if you've ever seen this screenplay to this thing, you would understand what Hudson Hawk is.
And, have you seen the screenplay to this thing?
Yes, haven't you?
No.
Well, you know, floating around the internet's a big hot thing right now. It's all over Dig. Right. But look,
I read a lot of screenplays.
She's a lovely woman. She's always been kind of attractive. Nothing wrong with that.
I disagree.
Oh, really?
I don't think it's wrong to say that I can dislike how an actress looks, because a huge part of your job is to look attractive to me.
Sure. Yeah.
And I don't think there is something that I always question about Andy McDowell. Like, how does she, what is she doing in Four Weddings and a Funeral? Or what is she doing in Multiplicity? Because I don't think she's attractive. She's got a massive forehead. I mean, we're talking Mount Rushmore forehead. And
she's a pachycephalosaurus.
She advertises.
We spent the first 2 minutes or first 5 minutes talking about how ugly the women are in this movie. We're going to get so much hate mail.
But that's why I put that disclaimer on it, Brian. I'm trying to express that it is okay when someone's job is to look attractive, to point out that you don't think they're entirely attractive. And I've yet to ever meet someone who thought that Andy McDowell was a sex object. I find something
girl next door about her that I've always liked. So there's something about her I like. I don't know what it is. In other words, is she the cutest actress of her day? No. Is she the ugliest? Hell no. Sandra Bernhardt takes that.
It's like she was a brunette when everybody else were blondes.
Yeah.
And all the brunettes finally caught up. And so, you know, the last 10 years, she's not done anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's 50 now or something, right? Yeah. Close to it. Anyway, mm-hmm. good luck to her and all that she does.
I'd like to apologize for all of our womanly meanness, the lesbian remark I made earlier, especially for me. That was
so sorry.
Yeah, it's especially not, Brian.
Meanness, and then the ageism. Yeah, I mean,
it's not meanness. If Danny Aiello was playing the lead in this movie, I would talk about how he's freaking pot bellied and
doughy and
yeah, like it's got nothing to do with that. I could really appreciate this role if it were being played by a more attractive woman.
For the record,
she's supposed to be a nun.
That's true.
Attractive you wanted to be.
But for the record, I would watch more Danny Aiello headed movies where he's the chief role. I love this guy.
I would too. He's brilliant.
He's super ancient now, but he's awesome. Just about everything.
Perfect for the centerpiece of this movie for the singing. Him and Bruce Willis do such a great job at that.
That was okay, I won't argue against the fact that it was well done. I will argue against the idea that it was a good idea to include it.
See, I'm the exact opposite, Scott. I think that is one of the most brilliant ideas I've ever seen, and it is carried into this film in the most ham-handed, stupid manner I've ever seen.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And that's exactly my point.
It's a crime that they've got this great idea of these guys who sing Bing Crosby while they're ripping off a museum, and it's so ruinous.
Yeah. Watching them dancing around going, wouldn't you rather be a turd, and then doing their thing. I thought that was great. I
love that.
That was great. It's just that it's wedged into a movie that doesn't know what the hell it wants to be, for sure. Like, it doesn't really know. But anyway, we'll get back to that in a minute. Let's talk about some of the basics of this film. Director Michael Lehman is the director. This movie was written by Bruce Willis and Robert Kraft.
And surprise.
Stands as the only movie in the history of Bruce Willis's career that he co-wrote anything on, has writing credits with. So other than that, that's it. Like, he didn't go on to go, I'm going to write some more stuff. I think they stopped there and said, you know what, we're probably good. The movie came out May 24th, 1991, which seems like yesterday, but really that's a long-ass time ago.
Yep.
And who else shows up? James Colburn, our second film sack movie with James Colburn.
Oh, yeah.
Looking good, man. I like that guy.
He's great.
Yeah. He helped me. Early role, David Caruso.
Yeah.
It kind of freaked me out when I saw
him. My favorite character in this movie, probably.
Kit Kat, eh?
Yeah, Kit Kat.
Yeah, all these guys with their stupid candy bar names. So stupid. Anyway, Frank Stallone. Don't forget him, dude.
Don't forget Richard E. Grant, who I'm surprised we haven't seen in another film sack movie yet, because he seemed like he was all over the place. Whenever they needed a snooty Englishman in the 80s or 90s, it seemed like it was always it was either Richard Grant or Alan Cumming that was filling the role.
He was immediately familiar, too, when he popped on screen. You're like, oh, yeah, that guy does this all the time. This isn't his first time to the pony show or whatever, how that phrase goes.
The horse and pony show.
Yeah.
Very good.
Frank Stallone looks just like his brother. That's all I'm saying. He's got the same little mouth and face, so it's kind of like a weird Uncanny Valley kind of thing going on with him, but it was cool to see him in the movie. Didn't he write Eye of the Tiger? Wasn't that the deal? There was something.
He wrote the other one, not Eye of the Tiger, but the movie. Not the song, but the sequel to Staying Alive.
That's right.
Still Staying Alive.
It was the sequel to Saturday Night Fever called Staying Alive.
It's called Staying Alive, which is the worst movie I've ever seen in my life.
Yes.
Oh, we got to watch that then.
Oh, no, we can't.
Wow. Did you pay attention to Hudson Hawk?
I cannot do it again. I can't ever do that movie again. I think Hudson Hawk beats that movie. So let's just... all right, well, some quick trivia. Then I want to really break down where the problems are and where the potential was, because I feel like this thing was sweating potential.
Yes.
A lot of times. Like, there were moments I'd go, all right... that's the Bruce Willis I like, and that thing he said is really funny, and that thing over there was really great. And then stuff would happen. I go, but no, you had a chance there, and why are you having so many boing sounds when people get hit in the head and stuff? Anyway, trivia. Bruce Willis says in the movie, there's a line where he says, directions even your brother can understand, to co-star Frank Stallone. On the script, this jab is directed at the character Anthony Mario, but is doubles as an off-screen jab at Stallone's real brother, Sylvester Stallone. Now that is less of a true piece of trivia and more of a internet poke in the eye, but I like it. It makes me laugh. Yeah. Also, Isabella Rossellini. Oh, did I tell you guys I watched Red or Blue Velvet?
No.
No. Sorry.
That movie's a festering pot of goo and shite. It's yeah. Randy was right. No, you warned me, dude. I should have taken heed. Mm-hmm. The movies. We will never do a... I just want to reiterate. We will never do a David Lynch movie on the show, ever.
Another David None of them.
I can't think of one.
Write that down, people, because Scott's going to end up eating those words for us.
I mean another one, because we did Dune. But I mean, like, what else is there? Like... I really like his lawnmower movie, but we're not doing that on Film Sack.
Well, we have toyed with the idea of watching Twin Peaks, which is we would have to figure out how to watch it and talk about it on Film Sack.
Well, they have a movie. Didn't they do a movie, a theatrical 2-hour release?
They did, yeah. Fire Walk With Me, which kind of tried to wrap up some of those loose ends.
And the trick with that, like Randy was saying in previous episodes, is we would come into it, or at least a lot of the listeners might also come into it, having not seen the original stuff, and that movie would be, you know, just one big giant spoiler bomb. Maybe we don't care, but I haven't seen any of the Twin Peaks stuff, so it would all be news to me.
Well, it's like we talked about watching the original Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy miniseries, and that, I mean, that would be very, very interesting, and it's available streaming in Netflix, but it's a departure for us. Like, do we break it up into two episodes of Film Sack? Do we try to, you know, talk about the whole whatever it is, 5 hours of something in one? It's just,
it's tricky.
We don't want to shoehorn something into this show unnecessarily. And any David Lynch film, including Twin Peaks and all its glory, is going to be shoehorned into this format. It's just rough.
Even Dune was rough. You know,
yeah. I think you know, something like Mulholland Drive or was it Mulholland Falls? Mulholland Drive,
which
I
would Mulholland Drive.
Wouldn't be a bad one, or
you know, I'm not saying I wouldn't really enjoy seeing Brian Dunaway get rip roaring drunk and watch Mulholland Drive. But that's not a Film Sack episode.
You had what me about get a, Brian rip roaring drunk. Oh, Racerhead, maybe. Maybe.
I haven't seen that one. That actually, I've heard that would be a good one.
It's his first big whatever that he was known for, and I've seen it, and it's weird as hell, but it might fit. That might
fit. Funny, no matter what you name, I'm just going to say, well, at least it wouldn't be as bad as Hudson Hawk.
Well, here's the thing. If we did Eraserhead, I wouldn't have any clips to capture, because most of that movie is stuff like this. Like, there's no dialogue in that movie. It's like a lot of bubbling organs and black goo, and it's just weird, that movie. Anyway, where the hell was I? Isabella Rossellini.
Isabella Rossellini.
Oh, yeah. She was cast originally as Anna Barguera, but when the film was delayed because of scheduling issues, that part was recast with Maruschka Detmers. However, due to back problems, if you know what I mean, she had.
Back problems.
I don't know.
She read the script and backed out.
Right.
Very good.
She backed out, and after a few days of shooting, and was finally replaced with Andy McDowell, and all those scenes were reshot. So,
see, I think Isabella Rossellini would have been awesome in this.
Yeah, which reminded me, by the way, of Blue Velvet, which is why I was thinking of that. I'm in agreement that she kind of sucks in this role. I just think she's cute. Oh, okay. I did want to make a mention of this before we move on. The guy who played Butterfinger, the big Bruno guy, is famous for being Leatherface in all of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies.
So, really?
Yeah, he's the body actor for that. And I want to say, I'd have to look it up, but I want to say he did a couple other things too, but he is... Where is he? His name is Andrew Brenarski.
I swear I thought he was Brian Bosworth at first.
I did too.
Dude's rocking a hell of a mullet too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was. And I also thought the look of the movie in terms of clothes and stuff didn't feel all that 91 to me. Some things did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, usually on this show we get something 91 through 93 and we kind of go, ooh, starting to look like, you know, a long time ago. And I didn't really feel that here. But just,
the only people that seemed like that were the gang, the candy bar gang, because they were really hip.
Yeah, and lots of suspenders and bright, the colored parachute pants, that kind of stuff, which is all fine. But so so back to this issue of the movie and where it's strong and where it fails. And I have a feeling this was probably Bruce Willis's attempt at franchising something other than another Die Hard movie.
And yeah, I could see that.
Everybody wants that, you know, and they want to have a hand in it, and they think that's where their careers are going to be the strongest. I really feel like that's what this was supposed to be.
This movie starts failing when they open up a storybook at the very beginning of the movie.
I actually stopped the movie because I had forgotten. I hadn't seen this movie in years.
You what? You had to check
and
make sure?
I started
sure.
to watch it, and I had to stop it. I'm like, did I click on the wrong thing? And I'm like,
franchising. No,
yeah, I think that he wanted Hudson Hawk to be a continuing character. They keep coming back to kind of James Bond style slash
Hudson Hawk 2.
Ruining my day.
Well, obviously it never happened. So
what would be wrong with a Hudson Hawk 2 now? I think it's a perfect time for a comeback.
I don't know.
Yeah, after the Da Vinci Code. Yeah,
I don't think anybody's planning for it. I mean, because
maybe Danny Aiello. But
I like snarky
after National Treasure and National Treasure 2.
Yeah, good point.
After Night of the Museum 2, we're going to have a new Hudson Hawk movie. I don't know.
Perfect.
I did not like any of those movies you just listed. I hated them all.
And you shouldn't like Hudson Hawk.
Well, I don't. And here's the trick. Here's the spin. Hey, here's the spin.
I'm going to say I if out of a scale of 5, I'm going to say I'm 2.51.
Oh, so you're a little more than half.
It's barely... better, yeah, than hating.
Than median.
So, Randy, you believe this is... I'll make some arguments as to why I don't think it's quite as bad, but you believe this is the worst movie we've seen on FilmSec.
Yes. I would much rather sit and watch Killer Clowns from Outer Space than...
That wasn't the worst. That was great.
I think the worst... What would you give the worst?
I was just plucking one out of the ether.
Yeah. What was the one with Retrograde?
Oh, yeah, Retrograde, our second movie, third movie. That one probably for me.
Yeah, that one was worse than this one.
But
there's redeeming parts about Hudson Hawk.
Well, there's so let's talk about what those are. So Bruce Willis at his snarkiest, and I always think that's good Bruce Willis. I enjoy him when he's kind of being a jerk. I like him being all flippant and kind of dorky
I'm talking to myself like this.
Yeah.
And everything. Yeah.
It's a little of an acquired taste, I think. I think a lot of people that may bug, but I think it's good Bruce Willis. It's like it's moonlighting Bruce Willis a little
exactly,
bit.
Exactly, yeah. Right.
So, let's steal the Da Vinci stuff. It'll be okay.
We'll get some laughs. Yeah, right.
Get some laughs.
I didn't like any of that. Da Vinci stuff was weird, just mainly because Da Vinci looked like Jesus walking around. I don't know what's going on over there.
And I couldn't figure out what he was so it's like I don't know. It was weird because it's like, okay, we want to express the fact that he's not sure about this gold machine. So we're going to kind of have him walk around through like a montage of all of his inventions that he's obviously inventing at all at one time. So apparently he only worked for like a week.
In his big castle compound on that hill.
Yeah, that opening was so unnecessary.
Yeah, it was oddly weird. But because I had never seen it, I thought, oh, all right, so there's going to be something about Bruce Willis's modern day character is kind of a jack of all trades guy, and he's going to be related to Da Vinci somehow, and he's been passed on this genetic code that makes him better than everyone. You know, so I'm making up the story as it starts.
You're making up a superior story.
I know.
I think that's what happened to this movie. I think in parts they had such great ideas, and they wanted to all those ideas to meet, but I think they just kind of ran out of time and just kind of went, "All right, we got to make this movie."
Yeah, a little bit of a sense of that. And some weird editing choices and stuff like that. But the buddy comedy bits were okay with me. Like, I think Danny Aiello and Willis together are funny. And
they're great.
I thought they were okay. And there were parts of that, like you said, with the singing bits. It got a little too like, oh, is this a musical all of a sudden? But at least that stuff had some charm and energy and kind of a weird, I don't know, like a weird we're robbing stuff but we're singing kind of vibe to it. I realize that's kind of on the nose and exactly what they were doing, but I just, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, there was something kind of kicking about that.
This is how you watch the movie. Okay, everybody explained to me how Minority Report is so good because of the pivotal change in the Minority Report, which is where the part where Tom Cruise gets frozen and everything after that is a dream, so it's okay that it's cliche. I believe the same thing happened in this movie and I got proof. If you watch Hudson Hawk up to the point where they're trying to escape from the fat guard after stealing the horse, you will notice that Danny Aiello's character is shot, and he grabs his belly as he's about to fall, and actually when Bruce Willis's character Hudson Hawk hits the ground, he is actually in a coma, and the rest of it is just this weird goofy dreamy sound.
Wow!
All right.
You watch it like that.
Shyamalan did Hudson Hawk.
You know what?
I would just like to say, Brian, I realize I'm calling back almost 4 years on Extra Life Radio. We talked about this the very first time I was ever on Extra Life Radio, And there was this wrong-headed thing, this drive to convince the world that you know, you were wrong on Minority Report, and yeah. everybody else thought it was a great movie. And I've never agreed with that. I feel yeah. like what you're talking about Minority Report in the middle of that movie takes it from being a 10 to an 8. And maybe yeah. for Brian Dunaway, it takes it from being a 10 to a 9 to an 8 to a 7 to a 6 or something like that. But I've never gotten the feeling. Right. I've never heard the justification that it makes Minority Report a horrible movie. It's just one of those things where it's no longer great for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sucked because it was so cliche. At that point in the movie, my eyes started rolling on the back of my head so hard, I thought they were going to fall out and fall on the ground, and Tom Cruise was going to pick it up and try to open a door with it. And it was bad.
I remember that conversation. I remember subsequent conversations. I remember being sort of vehemently opposed to your opinion on that movie because, I mean, you know, puke sticks. You had me at puke sticks. But beyond that, yeah. I think Minority Report's a fine film. But for me, it's difficult for me to find a comparison here because I feel like Minority Report is deftly handled, directorially speaking, and mm-hmm. all of that, to the point that, well, whatever they did, agree with it or not, it was like professionally done. Whereas there are parts in this movie where I just went, oh, dude, that's just bad. Like, what you did there is just horrible editing. That's a bad transition. That's really badly lit. Why is that guy acting like such crap? And then why are you mixing it in with some decent moments? Like, is this a non-drinking day? Like, what's going on the set of Hudson Hawk?
Anyone watching this movie, if you would watch the movie and, of course, listen to the cast first, hopefully that'd be the word it would go in, I want you to stop right after Bruce Willis falls into the tarp. And why don't you just stop it there at the movie, and then I want someone to review the movie and tell me what they thought about the movie.
From then to that point.
Up to that point, and don't watch any more after that. Yeah.
The movie up to the end of the first caper, which they cut away from so hard that it was jarring.
It was jarring. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's because he hit the ground and he knocked his head and he has a concussion and he falls into a coma.
I'm telling you, the movie
ends there. It's a good movie.
I'm going to completely agree with you that up to that point, pretty good movie. It's farcical.
Should we have to make these sort of excuses? Like, I think Minority Report is a really good comparison because when you have a movie based on a book by Philip Dick, directed by Steven Spielberg, starring Tom Cruise, I think it's fair to start at the beginning and say, this is a 10. I'm going to take points away if things happen in this movie that really distract me and make the movie less than perfect. Whereas with a movie like Hudson Hawk that starts out with the story of Da Vinci turning lead into bronze, and then later we're told it was actually gold, and we were never given an explanation as to why it was bronze at the beginning and gold later. This is a movie where I have to start at zero and desperately try to find something to give it credit for. You know, like they're complete opposites of creation. Yeah. These films.
Yeah,
I start at 5 and then I just
go. I start right in the middle.
Start in the middle and go one direction.
I love Ibbot. Yeah, yeah.
So Ibbot, you've said on the show many times it's a guilty pleasure of yours. You've always enjoyed it. How did things hold up in this viewing for you?
You know, it's still for me. It's aged a little bit. The thing is, I came into this thinking, the first time I saw it, thinking, all right, great, you know, Die Hard, oh, those are so good, action film, thriller, that sort of thing. And then you come into this, and it's marketed. This would be the third problem, by the way, coming back to when I said there were three problems with the film. The third problem is that this thing was marketed and intended to be, you know, another Bruce Willis action Die Hard kind of thing. You know, it was right after, let's see, 91. I don't know if Die Hard
was 86, wasn't it? And then Die Hard 2, Die Harder, whatever the hell it was 90.
Yeah, so it was right before it, but not like quite to Die Hard 3.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, you come into this and you're thinking, all right, it's going to be another movie like that. And you hear the boings and the, you know, the slapstick, him bouncing back and forth with the hits from James Coburn, anything. Oh, this is ridiculous. Now, if you come into it thinking, that's right. If you come into it thinking, all right, it's, and in no way, I can hear Randy loading the bullets. In no way am I comparing Bruce Willis to Peter Sellers in any way. But if you come into this thinking more along the lines of a Pink Panther styled slapstick heist movie, comedy kind of thing, with those elements, with those slapstick almost cartoon-like elements, then it really, you know, it fits the genre. It fits the mold a lot better than it would with any other genre as far as a...
You're making the framing argument, right? You're making the argument that your expectations and your you know, advertising somehow affect what's in the can and about to be shown.
Well, they specifically say this in the Wikipedia. They talk about how they advertised it as one thing at the theater and it received... you know, a lot of criticism, and then when it was released on videotape, it had a different type of marketing approach entirely. So
the argument being that if you are honest about your movie in the first place, then the expectations, then the expectations are, oh well, that is, I was sold a bill of goods, and the bill of goods is what I got, as opposed to they sold me Die Hard 3, and I got
I meant to do that argument.
Yeah. My favorite movies are the movies that I'm just flipping through the TV and just accidentally stop and start watching and go, wow, this movie is engaging and this guy, this about it, because I have absolutely no expectations. There's zero marketing towards it. And as a result, I'm able to appreciate the movie entirely, because like The Village, I hate The Village solely because when I went to see it at the theater, it was sold as an M. Night Shyamalan movie that was going to be with a twist. And the twist was stupid because it wasn't supernatural. It was just a bunch of...
It's interesting how... That's like the gold standard of expectations affecting the filmgoer's experience, that movie. Because that movie has one of the greatest scores ever performed.
Yeah.
And it's got excellent cinematography. Like the cinematography and coloring of The Village are 10 out of 10. And a lot of people, you know, will just talk about what the movie was about. And that's it. Like, that's all that movie stands for most moviegoers.
Yeah, I have not seen that one
yet. I realize the movie's good.
It's the one Shyamalama Ding Dong movie I've yet to see. Never saw that one. I haven't seen The Village. I don't know why. I don't know what happened there, but didn't see it.
When Joaquin gets his thing, you know, when the Joaquin thing happens, since Scott hasn't seen it, so I guess he can't say it now. When the thing to Joaquin happens, it happens to him. I mean, it is so effectual. I mean, it is just like, oh, it's just shot so beautifully. It's just...
And like I say, for me, it's the score. And I'm always taken aback by someone who has this, you know, sixth sense. Now I'm going to go watch The Village experience, and they hate The Village, because I almost want to turn the sound off or look at it, you know, 30 seconds at a time and skip forward 5 minutes just to show what a beautiful film it is. You know, another good example is Michael Bay's The Island. Cinematography.
I love The Island. I'm not going to. Mm-hmm. I can't talk that movie.
And incredible scoring by Steve Jablonski, and so many people are like, that was stupid.
Oh,
well, yeah.
I disagree. It had freaking Boromir in it. That movie kicked A. I liked it. All right, so let's move on to some clips. And before we do, just as a related note, my favorite Bruce Willis movie of all time is Unbreakable.
Speaking of, go around the table. Go around the table.
Shyamalan. So let's do that. Let's go around the table. So my favorite's Unbreakable. There's lots of stuff I could point to, but that one really sticks out in my head. Let's go counterclockwise. Brian Ibbett, who's your favorite or movie?
You know, Fifth Element probably would be my favorite Bruce Willis.
Oh.
That's a movie that if I'm flipping through the channels and I see that it's on HBO and there's, you know, 10 minutes left, I'm still going to flip over and watch the last 10 minutes. I don't know what it is about that movie. It's the beauty of the whole thing and Luc Besson's vision on that. You know, and Mila Jovovich certainly isn't
she's my
hard
favorite.
To look at.
Yeah, that doesn't hurt one bit. By the way, I was watching, I know that guy, what's his name? Some internet user, or whatever his name is. He's writing down furious and fast right now, but
I know it, man.
We're doing so much work.
I am a meat popsicle.
I was watching Batman Dark Knight again the other day with the kids and marveling at how much I enjoy that movie. And at the end had totally forgotten that the prisoner on the ship out there that was going to, that stole the little bomb detonator. And you thought he was going to blow the thing up, and instead he threw it out the window. That's the president on Fifth Element. It always throws me for a loop when I see that.
Oh, yeah.
Zeus,
yeah.
Tiny Lister.
Yeah, that guy's cool. Mm-hmm. Like the guy a lot. All right, let's get to some clippies. This is Sound Clips. What?
We didn't get to
say. Oh, sorry. Clockwise. Counterclockwise. That's where I got confused. All right, so let's see. Right now it would be Brian Dunaway. What do you got?
I liked him in Sin City.
Ooh, good one.
Yeah, that is a good one.
Yeah.
I thought he brought something to that he hadn't really brought before. I mean, he really showed his his age as far as dealing with it. And I just thought that was a great performance.
Yeah, he was great
Good
in that.
Choice.
He was great in that. A movie. I don't like that movie as much as I did when I first saw it, but I like him in it. He's great in it. Okay, Randy, what do you got?
We're basically just giving the pantheon of his best performances. I'm going to throw an honorable mention on behalf of everyone to Pulp Fiction, which is where he managed to be directed, like really well directed, and put himself into the character. I love that movie. But the best Bruce Willis performance for my money, and I can't wait for my child to be old enough to sit and watch this movie with me.
Ocean's 12.
The 2000 film Disney's The Kid.
Oh, that is a great movie.
That's a fun movie.
It's got that fat little kid from Two Men and a or no, what is it?
Two and a Half Men.
Two and a Half Men. Yeah.
Yep. Two Men and a Half.
Fat kid. Hope he doesn't grow up with any scars.
Bruce Willis's performance in that movie is complete, beginning to end. Life, career performance. And very few people have seen that movie, you know, seriously. A lot of people probably have their, you know, have it in their little kid library of DVDs. But
yeah,
it's a really fine film just to sit and watch. It's a beautiful story, and it's very pleasing and uplifting and all that.
And we all love the diehards. We don't want to leave those out. I love Die Hard 1.
Well, those are just so obvious.
I know. It's too easy. And by the way, to answer the question, who doesn't like Pulp Fiction? My mother. Okay, moving on.
And my wife.
My mom thinks that movie's the devil. I think it's outrageously influential and incredibly well done. But anyway, it's a little sweary for her taste. Hey guys, quick break to talk to you about Audible.com. They're sponsoring the episode, and I love Audible in so many ways, it's difficult for me to explain it all right here. But I am going to go back to an old favorite today and recommend, if you haven't read the series, the Dark Tower series by Stephen King, starting with The Gunslinger, book one of the Dark Tower series. Books, one of seven, I should say, is amazing. Even if all you ever read is book one, I cannot recommend it enough. I'm a huge fan of that series, of Stephen King in general. And you can get that book for free on Audible. There's tons more, though. There isn't just that. There's so much more at Audible. All of it can be had right there at your fingertips. If you want that or another free book, it's easy. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack. And do it today. Where am I?
Clips. You were going to play some clips.
I actually said, where am I? Which is great.
Where am I? So, your arm is.
This movie, okay, for all of its weaknesses, provides a lot of stuff to capture.
There was a lot of one-liners.
Right.
I'll give you that. Yeah. We could have a ton of clips.
We do.
And we could talk about a bunch of bits. I still think it sucks.
I agree, but we still have them. And so here's the beginning. Now, by the way, the part Randy's bugged about at the storybook beginning. Narrated by the voice of Matt Dillon in the original Gunsmoke radio serials.
Nice. Nice narration.
Whose name just went blank on me. I have to look it up. But anyway, I'll play that bit and then I'll find his name.
Long ago, the Duke of Milan commissioned a little-known artist to erect a mammoth statue of a horse. The time was 1481. The artist was Leonardo da Vinci. The guy on the donkey is just a guy on a donkey.
All right. There's your flavor. Anyway, William Conrad, sorry.
Yes, William Conrad.
The late, great William Conrad. Love that guy. And he really had grandpa voice by then, but back in the...
I thought
it ended itself perfect.
Because back in the 40s, that guy was like, where do you think, Chester? We ought to go in with the guns blazing. You know, he was like a totally cool, low-voiced dude. But the problem is he looks like Dom DeLuise in real life, so they didn't put him in the TV show. They put Will Arness in there instead. There's another one for you, buddy, out there writing all this down. Mm-hmm. All right. Moving on. So that's that. This is fresh out of prison, Bruce Willis.
Eddie! So the Hudson Hawk is finally getting out. Remember all the reporters that were here when you came in? World's greatest cat burglar. Now, who gives a f***? Got a proposition for you.
The answer's no, Gates, even if you're bathed.
Now listen, smartass. As your parole officer, I found you a job.
No way.
It's a terrific job.
An auction house.
One night's work and you're free. No checking in with a shrink. No more community service.
But I want to do community service. I want to teach a handicapped how to yodel.
Okay, I just want to get my head around that. Teach the handicapped how to yodel? It seemed like, I don't know, should I should be offended by that, or I should be like thrilled that that's happening, or sad that it's never been a real thing. I don't know what to think about lines.
Frustrated
like that.
That it's not funny, nor is it enlightening, nor does it add to any good movies.
Yeah. It seems like that was an improvised line that sounded really funny when he said it, and then, you know, upon analysis.
A lot of this movie was improvised, and so, I think that's one of those things where they should have probably have taken about 12 more shots and found something that was actually funny. But
that's right.
There's a little bit of a, I wrote this down in my notes. The movie has a tone of a kind of Addams Family style 90s, very early 90s farcical kind of approach to everything where it's, you know, where they depict violent death, it's treated in such a way that it's kind of just super trivialized and all the bing and bong sounds and just the, I don't know, the slapsticky way that that sort of stuff's approached, but then they'll do really, you know, some kind of grisly and hard, and then you're like, oh, wow, really? And then they got some sweet jazz music of him walking through the prison with his freaking, you know, jive-talking parole officer. It was a weird decision to go with that tone overall. I don't know if that contributed to making the movie not nearly as good as it could have been, or in Randy's mind, the worst movie ever. I don't know. I felt like
a lot of times they said, okay, we need to shoot this scene. What do we have on hand? Because I know the guard who was given Bruce Willis his clothes back had the same fake teeth that we saw later on in the movie. So I'm like, those scenes must have been shot like on set somewhere, and so they just use the teeth over again or something, which is totally disgusting. But anyway,
of course they used the teeth over again.
They had to. They were Sandra Bernhard's. Anyway, go ahead.
Yes. But the one thing I thought was really interesting about this movie that I didn't see anywhere in any trivia or anything, this movie obviously went to the MPAA. And MPAA had just started NC-17. And you'll notice there are so many times where Bruce Willis is dubbed over for dropping the F-bomb like he did in that scene. And they took out so many F-bombs. There must have been, I don't know how many.
Well, they left a good number in, too. Yeah, but
they left a lot in to just get an R rating instead of an NC-17.
Hmm, interesting.
Well, you might recall this was also a time when a lot of films did AVR after the fact and went ahead and made your network television ready version.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
And so it's funny when you see shots where they specifically shoot from behind and you hear the lines and go, "Oh, they were making it so I couldn't see his lips moving," and they can have four different versions of that line. There were a bunch of instances of that in this movie.
You know where the best example of good voiceover work for fixing it for TV is by far, and I've said it on the show before, but it's the TV TNT version of The Big Lebowski. And if that's the first time you see that movie, you think that you've got a Coen Brothers movie you could show to grandma, and you go rent it and you realize, oh my gosh, I've made a horrible, terrible mistake, because they did such a good job in the TV conversion. I never noticed, and I have an eye for this and an ear for it. I can see it and hear it and everything. Even this little goofs where they just try to cover it up with voiceover because the guy's mic was off, now they're out filming outside or whatever, I can tell. But in that movie, dude, it's just non-existent. So when I went and got it and like brought it home and like had a whole bunch of family over and like, let's watch this great movie, man. He's Jeff Bridges, he's a riot. I turned this thing on, it's like effity, effity, F-bomb the whole movie. I was like, this is not the version I saw. But it's interesting that, so here's my impression of Pulp Fiction, speaking of Pulp Fiction, for the TV release, which they did one. There's a TV release that ran on some channels around here. Yep. Here's how it works. It's like this.
It's 5 minutes long.
You know, they literally just create space because there's, what else are they going to do? They're not going to go, hey, just say fliggity flaggity boodly doo and you're going to get through it, you know?
I remember seeing The Breakfast Club on the WGN in the Channel 2 thing that they feel that we have here, and it was like, freak you. Freak you. No, freak you.
Awesome. It's kind of ridiculous.
Go freak yourself. Wait, that doesn't sound right.
You guys are already predicting Scott Fletcher's quotes at the end of the show. I can't wait for you guys to hear these.
Oh, man.
They're really good. He did a ton of them, too. Anyway, let's move on to some nice product placement in 1991.
Now that you're born again, what do you want to do? Statue of Liberty, entertain some ladies, Broadway takes, seduce some women, play Nintendo, bone some jakes.
What's Nintendo?
Yeah, what's Nintendo? Nice.
What's Nintendo? I love that.
You know what? See, that made me laugh, and I actually laughed when I recorded it.
I was already laughing because I was laughing at him saying bone the chicks and blowing the horn three times.
Right. It's the Danny ALO or ILO or however you say it. It's his factor, man. He you have to admit, Randy, he brought the film up a little bit. Just a little.
Oh, sure. Sure. I mean he was riffing on his character from
Godfather.
Harlem Nights.
Or Harlem Nights, yeah. He was good in The Godfather too, by the way.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the performance. But by the way, I don't think that's product placement. I think that's just a bad script.
Pop culture.
You know, this is a little before product placement invaded everything. This is a couple years early.
Yeah, it's probably not official product placement. It's kind of like The Wizard. It's not like Nintendo paid anybody for anything, but they, you know, they get a little talking anyway. Although the chick's getting boned, I think they probably paid a little cash for that.
Yeah.
Moving on to the Mario Brothers. And my favorite line in the entire film, Dunaway knows this one is, because he brought it up on Final Score the other day, but here it is.
Call me superstitious, Caesar. I don't like to commit a crime within 24 hours of getting out of the joint.
It's very simple. There's a safe on the seventh floor. You take their thingy and you put it in this thingy.
Directions even your brother could understand.
Yeah, directions even I could understand.
Shut up. Mark, you're the best. You're the only one who can do this job. You know that. Don't tell me a lot of horse shit. You want to open up a hardware store, go straight and sell spatulas.
You know, Caesar, if the Mario Brothers weren't New Jersey's third largest crime family, I'd say kiss my ass. But considering your status, I will say slurp my butt.
That's right. Slurp my butt. And if that doesn't stick in your mind, I have this now.
Slurp my butt.
I can pull that up anytime I want.
That is awesome. Thank you. You know, I didn't catch that the first time through.
You didn't hear that?
Because I was so annoyed that a character who hadn't heard the Bruce Willis character already make a joke about selling spatulas made the same joke again. I was like, man, this is the worst screenplay wrangling I've ever heard. And I missed the rest of the scene because I'm pondering, like, did I really hear Bruce Willis earlier in the film say he was going to go sell spatulas? Or, you know, like, could this be something that these guys just joke about naturally? And even though he's been out of the game for a decade, you know, they're still joking about selling spatulas or what? Like,
at a hardware store.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just ruined for the rest of that scene.
Slurp my butt.
That's right. Okay, wrong numbers. What is Mr. Clip, here it is.
673 wongs in a phone book.
A hell of a lot of wong numbers.
Oh yeah, I forgot.
Jeez. I didn't want to laugh at that, but it totally caught me off guard.
Yeah, but see, you're not laughing at the joke part of it. You're laughing at the fact that was presented as a joke.
That somebody said, oh, that's a great one. Put that in.
Wong numbers.
I can't believe they caught me off guard with that one. It's like, I felt
off guard.
I let my guard down because I'm like, okay, this movie is obviously not going to challenge me intellectually with this comedy. And so I totally let my guard down, and that got me.
I like that you keep using phrases with the word guard in it, and you don't realize that you're making a pun yourself.
Yeah, letting my guard down, all the wrong numbers. All right, here are some of those candy bar names. This is when we get to know some of those losers.
Name's Snickers. Plane leaves in 40.
Almond Joy. Get it? Candy bars. Well, it's better than when we first started out. Our code names were diseases. Do you know what it's like being called chlamydia for a year? Oops, forgot.
All right.
That was horrible.
Starting to feel like Randy now. That is so bad.
That was terrible.
Such a bad, just...
Well, again, it's an unnecessary joke. Like, the best you could come up with for saying your previous names was, oh, diseases. I was called chlamydia. You know, come up with something else. We were named after pancake syrup, and I was called Mrs. Butterworth.
Right, right. You just wrote a better movie. Listen to us rewriting Hudson Hawk.
Anyone who speaks English could have written a better movie.
That's a really good point. And you know what? They kind of, the joke, you know, I have to be mindful of this with comics. Sometimes if you spell out your joke, it's the wrong joke.
Yeah.
So all she needed to say was, oh, you think that's bad? We used to be named after diseases. And leave it. That's still lame, but it's better than going, how'd you like to be called chlamydia? Slap my knee.
Yeah, we would totally sit there and thought of different things. We used to be named after barnyard animals, and I'd go, "Oh, a goat? No, yeah, a chicken."
Yeah, they used to call me a rooster. What's that red thing hanging from a rooster's beak? What's that called? Rooster balls? Yeah. I don't know. Whatever.
The gobbler.
The gobbler.
The waddle. That's it.
The waddle. Moving on. Sandra Grossface Bernhard steps in to steal the scene.
You go back to jail, and you won't be alone. You'll have a guinea barkeep cellmate to keep you company. You're young enough to still enjoy shanking child molesters for a pack of smokes. But Tommy Fivetone will go in knowing the next time he gets out will be to attend his own funeral.
The magic word.
Dude, Bruce, wash your ear, dude.
Dude.
She sounds better than she looks. You know, hearing just the audio of her without the visual, so
and
much
she
better.
She sounds horrible. She really doesn't have a good delivery at all.
I think her delivery sucks, but her voice is okay. Like, you could picture behind that voice a decent-looking human being.
I can't.
But because once you've seen her, though, I just picture that.
My skin was crawling.
It's like the underside of an octopus, like that weird mouth they have. It's like a beak. It's like that, and it's on Bruce Willis's ear.
It reminded me of when a predator is demasked and opens his mouth and screams. Remember when in the first Predator film?
Yeah, that was a big deal. Oh. I remember that. I remember everybody at school the next day going, dude.
Sandra Bernhardt is the Predator.
The Predator.
That's awesome.
I wonder if she's ever gotten any jokes about, you know, told to her face that
what about how ugly she is?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'm sure that's happened.
I mean, she's experienced that.
I don't think she cares. She's walking around stage, tucking her boobs in her shorts, you know, showing off her chest.
Tucking her boobs into her shorts.
I'm sure she knows.
I think her whole thing was self-deprecating humor for a while in the 90s. Yeah. And then she completely flipped it around and was like, women power.
Made it into more of a performance art. But,
right,
but
exactly.
Some time ago, she was always on roast panels and, you know, that's just an invitation for people to call you ugly.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to remember. There was some TV show or something she was on that I kind of liked her in. Like, her character, it really fit. Like, it wasn't obnoxious or in your face like this. I don't remember what it was. But anyway, good luck to her in her zombie ways. Moving on to, another awesome priest. So we had some cool priests in The Omen. And I like the guy in this movie, too.
Vanity of this man, Hudson Hawk. The Vatican has foiled the advances of pirates and terrorists. We will not lie down for some schmuck from New Jersey. And must you flirt with him so effectively?
That's the only way.
As an agent of our organization, you are put in awkward situations. Just remember, Hudson Hawk is an evil, evil man.
Like the priests with all the inside knowledge, they're stopping terrorists and pirates. I like that. There's something about that I really like, so they can always do that. And you're right. Did you hear her talking in that? She's terrible.
She is. How does a girl from Kentucky get to be a head nun at the Vatican?
Can't. Is this during the dream time that Brian claims the movie's
in? Yes,
it
would be, yes.
Yes, that's right.
Because I don't think.
Doesn't count.
She doesn't exist. She only exists in his subconscious. That's awesome.
That's a great idea.
I like
idea.
That guy, Leonardo Simenon, whatever his name is.
Oh, the actor? Yeah.
Little guy? Yeah, he's in a lot of stuff.
Creepy
he's,
little
he
dude.
Always praise the old creepy guy.
I actually have three quotes from him. Here he is in confession.
Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been 1,200 hours since my last confession.
Oh, wait. How come I just captured that? That's not right. Sorry.
I don't know, but I like it.
That wasn't supposed to be the
1,200 hours.
They tell time differently in Rome.
Oh, my gosh. I hadn't even thought about that. That's weird. That's a totally weird thing to keep track of. Hours? What the hell? All right. Here's the real clip.
You know that little dude was the Baron's doctor, right, in Dune?
No. He was?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Creepy little dude. Was he also the bald dude in Empire Strikes Back that had the little earpiece things on, like a little weird little visor?
No.
In the
but he
city?
Did play. He did have a visor on V.
Oh.
No, he didn't have a visor. He was just one of the people. That's right. He was just one of the. Remember the original series V?
Yeah.
He was the guy who remembered being in the Jewish camps during World War II, and he was always trying to tell everybody how bad it was going to be.
Oh. I don't remember that at all. No, I just remember some chick eating a gerbil. That's all I remember from the original VHS. Seriously, the whole thing's a blur. I remember that Freddy Krueger was in it and that a lady ate a gerbil. That's the extent of my V knowledge. All right, he goes off
on my DVD.
Please do. Do you have it? You have it on DVD?
Oh yeah, man.
Yeah, the part where her jaw goes and fits the whole whole gerbil or gopher or whatever it was in there.
Jane Badler, man, she's awesome.
That's a great name for someone who can eat an entire guinea pig and won't bite.
He was also in 12 Monkeys. I forget about 12 Monkeys.
I love 12 Monkeys. He was one of those old dudes behind the desk.
No, I'm wrong. I had Bruce Willis still pulled up.
There's your...
another great Bruce Willis role, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, I forgot about that. And by the way, my favorite Brad Pitt role of all time. Mm. Loved him in 12 Monkeys. Oh, he was great.
Wow. I have a hard time elevating something over Fight Club for Brad Pitt.
Well, you're right. He was really good in there, too. Fight Club just made me... I just felt gross when I left that movie. Not in kind of like it didn't offend me. I just felt like there was a zero redeeming quality to it. Like there's great acting, really cool story. I love Fincher. I love all that stuff. But I walked out going, eh. Just, I don't know. Hard to explain. Maybe that's a film sack movie for the future. Not for the whole family, I might add.
Yeah. No.
Last Leonardo movie that I'm going to mention, since I know Scott loves this movie so much, Waterworld.
Oh, I love Waterworld.
Yeah, he was the elder.
It's on our film sack list. Stay tuned. Stay tuned for more. Okay, he's talking about the Pope here.
Oh, the Pope warned me never to trust the CIA.
That's right.
Slurp my butt.
That's right. All right, I'm ripping through these. I have so many and we're running out of time. Boing, boing noises in this movie we talked about, like sort of stupid slapstick sound effects. Mm-hmm. I have an example of it. This is when the butler got hit in the face with a ball, tennis ball.
Oh, yeah.
And by the way, I kind of liked him because he had those blades and stuff. That kind of stuff is okay with me, but...
I like that.
Anyway, got hit in the face. Here's the sound effect.
Ball! Jolly good shot.
So stupid. Here's our serious action movie with F-bombs and blood, but we're going to have a little cartoon sound.
That's right.
Yeah, of course, this is the first time I'd ever seen the film. So the first time they do that is when they're ripping off the museum in the first big caper scene. And he bonks a couple of guards' heads together and goes, bonk, you know, and it's like, oh, my gosh, this is a totally different film than I thought I was watching.
Yeah. And see, you can't put that under Brian's framing of the dream sequence because that happened early when everyone was awake.
But it was still funny.
Oh, I don't know, dude. I think the minute I heard that, I went, oh, really? Really? This is what we're going to do? We're going down this path? Mm-hmm. All right. The Master Evil Plan. Wait,
European superpowers are coming together for one business superpower.
And that's one party we're going to love to poop.
Well, that's it. The last ingredient in the recipe is Da Vinci's model of a helicopter.
On display for 3 days only at the Louvre in Paris.
As opposed to the Louvre in Wisconsin?
Shut up. You're going to make me lose my place.
All right, see? This is an example of some. There's an example of where I think the banter kind of works, and the Bruce Willis factor kicks in, and it's okay. It kind of made me laugh, for real. Like I'm not laughing at the fact that it's horrible. I'm laughing because it's all right.
I think that's a sign that it's well acted, but maybe not well written.
Right.
Because Richard E. Grant, I mean, just about everything that he said in this movie was laugh inducing, but it wasn't because of the lines itself. It was just because of his over the top. Out there-ness that I really like. I think same thing with Sandra Bernhardt. The stuff she says is lame and boring, but the way she delivers it, I thought was really funny.
So I've got a clip here of proof that Bruce Willis was working on a Christmas-themed movie, and we never got to see it. So join with me now in listening to Bruce Willis try out for Santa Claus.
Ho, 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 ho.
There you go. I love that.
Good clip.
Ho, 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 ho. And then the final scenes where Bruce Willis crash lands, probably the most expensive relic in the history of humankind. I keep seeing Roddy McDowell. That would be a better movie, by the way. Roddy McDowell. But no, Andy McDowell. And he asks her the very important question, which I'll play now.
Anna?
Yes, that's it.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
Will you play Nintendo with me?
I can't think of anybody I'd rather play Nintendo with.
There you go. I forgot I put that on there.
Thank you, Scott. The minute they went to Da Vinci's castle, I started thinking, I know how they're going to get out of this place. There's no doubt in my mind how they're going to get out, because it had been telegraphed at the very beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
And it just ruined that for me, because that was actually the opportunity for the film to not redeem itself, no way, but to just end on a up note, you know?
Yeah.
And instead, I saw it coming. It was not great at all. So then they tried again, like, okay, well, then we'll go to a cafe and have it end on an up note, because they have this running gag throughout the whole film that he wants a cup of coffee and he's going to finally get one. And that should not have been better than the scene where they escape on the glider. Like, it's just strange to me how that worked out.
Yeah, you'd think the big expensive, set piece of the glider would have been, gold compared to him cracking wise at the cafe.
Yeah.
But the cafe wins every time.
It does. And this movie had two bookends. And I don't usually like bookends on movies.
Well, where they literally open a book and have a narrator, you mean?
No. That was a literal translation on that one. But like Saving Private Ryan had that whole bookend movie where it's like, okay, let's visit the grave. Okay, and now let's have the movie. And then at the very end, let's
be at the grave still.
Leave the grave. I don't like when they bookend movies like that.
Yeah, I think I'm generally not a fan of that, although I think it's fine in Saving Ryan's Privates, because that's a great movie. But
yeah,
generally speaking, I'm not a fan of that either. I think it holds well.
See, with Spielberg movies, I started a 5.
And then where?
work your way
up or down? Where do you usually
it
work?
It varies.
Forget about depends Crystal Skull. Movie, yeah. Forget about yeah. Crystal Skull even existing. Where do you usually end up on a Spielberg scale?
In the last 10 years, ever since he took the guns out of E.T., me and him have not been on speaking terms.
Parted ways nice. That day. Yeah, I don't like that either. That's may as well, they should have done. They should have replaced, instead of taking the guns out and putting radios and walkie-talkies in everyone's hands, they should have taken the guns out and putting Guido in place of all the guys that were there shooting at stuff.
Guido.
Yeah, what'd I say, Guido?
Guido.
I meant Guido.
That would have been a whole different movie. Hey,
Danny Aiello,
there's a kid
Guido.
On a bike right there.
Hey, what you doing, eh? I meant Greedo. Anyway, Greedo shot at E.T. first. That's what that would have been. All righty. Well, that's clips. I got a bunch of stuff from Fletcher here in a minute. But before we do that, let's go to our film tech checklist, which is patiently waiting for me right over here. And that list goes as follow, title with a double meaning. Literally, because he was from the Hudson River.
He even explained it, yeah.
Yeah. Dumb adults, everybody. I think that only works if it's in the, there's a juxtaposition of children.
Yeah, and there was none.
There weren't any.
Or just younger adults and other adults.
Yeah, true that. Peeing, yeah. Nope. Barfing, nope. Booby, thank goodness, no. Although, well, anyway. Jerk character with facial hair. No, both the jerks, main jerks, didn't have any facial hair. They were kind of...
Just Butler, the only jerk was Butler. Yeah, I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, the Butler. I forgot about him. But he was just like... Mm-hmm. Again, Adam's family.
He's hired help.
I got Adam's family vibe through the whole movie. Yeah. I really did, in a weird way. It's not like it was fake horror, goofy, Halloween-y.
It's those twins, Ig and Ook, who were also twins in Adam's family.
By the way, when they died, did you notice they said their own names as they died? That was great. Or not great at all. Stereotypes, sure. We could nitpick, but there's plenty. Black guy dies first. I think the first guy to die, and I wrote this down and now I can't find it, but I think the first person to die was one of the henchmen. And I don't think he was less than pale version like me.
No.
Decapitation, no. I was hopeful. Star Trek Connection eluded me. Couldn't find one.
Oh, actually, there was a decapitation. What are you talking about? There wasn't one.
Which one?
There was totally the butler.
Oh, crap! I totally forgot about that.
I knew there was one here somewhere. I didn't write it down, though.
I completely forgot. They full-on cut his head off.
Yep.
But they probably had bonk. I mean, it was like from some silly thing. So it didn't hit me with any kind of meaning.
Given all of her work on TV and how much she already looks like a Cardassian, I don't understand how Sandra Bernhard never made it into... Mm.
There are four lights.
Yeah, that's there are so four lights. That is awesome. She'd make a great alien, so what the crap?
She would.
Bad guy with a... Somebody in the listening audience will send it and correct us. I'm sure there's a Star Trek connection, but I couldn't find it.
Oh, there's one.
Who? Where? What?
Wait. Notes.
Okay, you keep looking
keep
it
moving
up.
On.
There was
keep
a there on. Was a Star Trek game available on Nintendo. Does that count?
No. That's that is too far removed. That is Kevin Baconing this thing to death. While Brian looks for that Kenobi type, who would we give the Kenobi type to?
The Aiello, perhaps?
I'm going to say he's as close as we're going to get because he was goofy, but who else you got? Everyone else is goofier. Mm-hmm. Animal.
Don't force it in. Not all films have boobies. Not all films have Kenobis.
I want to force boobies into this movie. Animal.
I'm just waiting for the movie with a Kenobi with boobies.
There were no animals or robots or any of that. No kids. The montage didn't exist in this film. Except, oh no, you know what? I take that back. The Da Vinci stuff at the beginning could be construed as a montage. Mm-hmm. And finally, the cave that looks like a vagina. I don't think there was a cave.
I don't think
there was some ruins. Rubble in somebody's backyard.
I saw a scene with Sandra Bernhardt. I'm not even sure there was a vagina. That's terrible. Keep your hate mail to yourself. Write BrianEbbott@gmail.com. Just kidding.
You know what's sad? Of the two women that we have kind of torn down talking about this movie, I feel much more protective of Sandra Bernhardt than Andy McDowell.
Not me.
I feel like Sandra Bernhardt's getting this too short end of stick here, but yeah. I don't even care. You can say whatever you want about Andy McDowell.
I feel like if we walked into a room and Sandra Bernhardt was there and you said, hey, I totally defend you on film sex, she'd say, whatever, and she'd hit you in the head with a bat. I think she could care less what people think.
All right, Hudson Hawk. Let's see. Hudson Hawk. There was Michael Clasterin. Hold on a second. Let me look at this guy. I'm getting these from Treknoid at AOL.com. Ha ha. Said your email address.
All right. What is someone sending those
to us? This is Danny. Yeah, Danny sent these to us. He sent me an email.
Oh, cool.
And I'm trying to go through these real quick. And Hudson Hawk, Dean, Star Trek Nemesis, crew unit publicist. All right. I don't know.
Nice, dude. So it's some weird crew connection.
It's really weird. It's really obscure. He said it was really hard.
It is a hard one. So I'm going to go with
it. But he found it.
I like Ibbots better.
So thank you, Danny.
that dog was in an episode of Deep Space Nine once.
I think I saw Wesley Crusher eating a Kit Kat once.
Oh, you know what? you could say that the dog, or a piece of trivia that's interesting, is the dog is the voice of Megatron in Transformer cartoon history.
Huh.
So why they would, I don't know why they had to voice a dog or hire a guy to do it, but whatever.
I will guarantee you that at some point or other, Tasha Yar had chlamydia.
I'm sure of it.
And her nickname was Almond Joy.
And she got it from a Butterfinger. Mm. Eating. What am I saying? We are going to now move to the Twitter post. Sorry. 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy. Randy, sum this film up if you haven't already.
Hudson Hawk. No.
Love it. Perfect. Let's now do Brian Ibbett.
Hudson Hawk, a guilty pleasure that makes me feel guiltier and guiltier every time I watch it.
Well said. And then finally, Brian Dunaway.
Hudson Hawk, dancing, singing, slapstick. What more does an action movie need? This movie sponsored by Nintendo.
Nice. Don't do drugs. And I will say that this is what I learned while all of you were throwing your parole officer's keys in the mop bucket. Having 8 syringes jammed in your face at once is a terrible way to die.
That was actually hilarious.
And
I love
made
a
me
good
hurt.
Take.
Made my face
I
hurt.
I thought it was hilarious.
Nothing ruined your action adventure movie like boing boing sounds. Leonardo da Vinci looks like Jesus. I already mentioned that. And nobody puts Frank Stallone in a corner. That's what we learned while you stepped out for a moment. Let's let Scott Fetcher sum some things up. But before we do that, an email from a listener. These come to us to filmsack@gmail.com. Keep these coming. We like to read one each week. We got this from Nikki S., who says, things I learned about my friends at Filmsack this week. Scott Johnson, if you walk into Scott's bedroom at 1 a.m. with Sarah Jessica Parker in one hand and a growling Rottweiler in the other, he will make a poopy in his pants. Randy Jordan. Made the Old Faithful Inn sound like a really freaky, scary place to visit. I don't remember the reference. Brian Ibbett may own the John Travolta compilation DVD pack, which includes Boy in the Bubble, for an extra $5.99. And finally, Brian Dunaway apparently has a listing of his favorite and not so favorite decapitations hidden somewhere very close by.
And keep it right here.
Love, Nikki S. Thank you, Nikki. We love Absolutely. You as well. That's we love awesome. All our listeners. Thank you guys for sending those. Scott Fletcher, take us out with a couple of great quotes, won't you? Here's one about, I don't remember, I think torture.
I'll torture you so slowly, you'll think it's a career.
Yes.
I actually love that.
That is a good line.
Pretty good. And he did the Wong number one, too. Check it out.
Mmm. Hell of a lot of Wong numbers.
That's so great. And then lastly, a bonus quote from Scott, and I didn't name it anything, so this is a surprise to all of us.
Looks like you won't be attending that hat convention in July.
Which is dumb because he still has a head.
True.
Yeah, yeah.
You could put a hat on a head.
Oh, you know what? What the hell? I'm going to play two more. I got two more. Let's listen to this one.
What can I tell you? I'm the villain.
Nice. And then he does his best priest impression right here.
Oh, the Pope warned me never to trust the CIA.
That's awesome. He sent me all these keepers. Extra ones this week. Yeah, they're all keepers. Yeah. So thank you, Scott Fletcher. Thank you, Bruce Willis.
Ho, 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 ho.
And also...
Slurp my butt.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you guys for being here. This is yet another episode of Film Sack. And next week we have our review and our conversation regarding Jason Goes to Hell, The Final Friday.
Excellent.
Looking forward to that.
Starring Ice Cube. What?
You know, I'm really excited about the next film, but before we exit this episode, I have to say, I think it's really cool how talking to you guys, and I feel like we're all real actual friends. We're not just guys who happen to be talking about the same movie. How you guys have managed to steer me away from my complete and utter disgust about this film. Like, I think it's cool that I could start the show and throughout the show say, I despise this movie, but there was never a call for, you know, it to be just torn down and burned and salted, you know, like that. It's just cool that we can talk like this and kind of keep it fun.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if anything, I've learned to hate the film more during this hour than when I stepped in, because I really didn't hate it too much walking in. So yeah, it all equals out in the end, I like to say.
Yes.
Yep.
So that's going to do it for us, folks. Thanks for being here. Can't wait to see you next week. Again, that's Freddy Goes to Hell. Or no, wait. Jason Goes to Hell. Jason Goes to Hell.
The final spoiler.
Turns out it wasn't the final Friday after all, but you can watch and see why. That movie came out in 1992, and good luck. The site to visit is filmsack.com. The email, once again, to send us emails and feedback and conversation is filmsack@gmail.com. Twitter.com/filmsack is where we can be found each and every day. And give us a review on iTunes. We'd love that as well. Thank you, Scott Fletcher. Thank you, Brian, and Randy. That's going to do it for us. We'll see you guys next week.
Hey, mister, are you going to die?
Peter Vincent, vampire killer.
Peter Vincent.
It's Peter Vincent.
Charlie, Peter Vincent's on.
Forget Peter Vincent.
But you love him. Charlie, I said stop it!
Amy, give me a break. Charlie, stop it.
Charlie, I'm ready.
Amy, you're not going to believe this. Amy!
Amy? Charlie? What's wrong?
Are you kids having a lover's spat?
Oh, Amy. Oh, yes, Mrs. Brewster. Well, good night, Charlie. Good night, Mrs. Brewster.
Night, Amy. Thanks for helping Charlie with his homework.
Charlie, that wasn't very nice, not walking Amy to the front door.
Mom, there are people next door. Well, that's the point to a pop quiz, Brewster, to surprise you. Hey, Amy. Amy! Hey, buzz off, evil. Amy, I love you.
Charlie?
Oh, you're so cool, Brewster.
It's lovely, Charlie. I have to get up at 7.
Charlie,
did you stay up studying?
Mom, I'm not sick!
Charlie, is this some sort of a trick to get me back? Charlie!
But I sure as hell am going to tell him about the two women.
Charlie!
Mr. Dandridge, where is Mr. Dandridge?
Charlie? Yes, Charlie. It's sleeping the sleep of the undead. Evil! Clive!
Charles?
Charlie! Charlie.
What's the matter, Charlie?
Oh, Jerry.
Charlie.
Charlie.
Night, Mom.
I know you're there, Charlie.
What's the matter, Charlie? You
started this, Charlie.
I just destroyed your car, Charlie.
Peter Vincent.
Watch me do it.
Go, Peter.
Mr. Vincent! Mr. Vincent!
Dandridge?
That's murder, Charlie.
Or Amy.
Amy. Charlie. Peter Vincent.
Amy.
Charlie.
Amy.
I love you, Charlie.
Amy.
Mr. Vincent.
Charlie Brewster.
And Mr. Vincent. Mr. Vincent.
Yes, this is Jerry Dandridge.
Charlie Bruce and Peter Vincent Vampire Killer.
Mr. Vincent.
And Charlie.
No, Charlie.
Mr. Vincent. He won't.
Charlie.
Mr. Vincent.
I know, Mr. Vincent.
Peter Vincent.
Billy Cole.
And Charlie.
Hey, Jer!
Mr. Vincent.
Ed Thompson. Amy Peterson.
Charlie.
Brewster.
Charlie.
Mr. Vincent.
Charlie.
Charlie.
Mr. Vincent.
Charlie.
Mr. Vincent.
Charlie. Mr. Dandridge.
Charlie.
Oh, Charlie.
Yes, Charlie. This Mr. Vincent?
Mr. Dandridge.
Please call me Jerry. Two, Ed. Something wrong, Mr. Vincent?
Mr. Vincent.
Vincent, you have to call the police. Mr. Vincent, shit!
Pencil Dick.
Amy.
And Brewster.
Young evil.
Dandridge.
Brewster.
Hey, Charlie. Kill me, Charlie.
There's fruitcake.
Charlie, Amy.
Hello, Edward. Here, Edward.
Eva.
Eva.
Amy.
Peter Vincent.
Charlie.
Peter Vincent.
Amy.
Dandridge has me and Amy.
No, Charlie.
Mr. Vincent.
Charlie.
Charlie. Peter Vincent. Amy.
You want chicken, man? You go someplace else.
Amy. Amy. Charlie.
Amy.
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 Peter!
Charlie Brewster!
Dandridge, Amy!
Dandridge has Amy!
Peter!
Peter!
Amy!
Peter Vincent!
Charlie, Peter!
Amy!
Peter!
Charlie!
Where's Charlie?
Peter Vincent, ready to do battle with the undead.
I am Peter Vincent. Peter Vincent, the great vampire killer.
I am Peter Vincent, the great vampire killer.
Where's Amy?
Mr. Vincent.
Mrs. Brewster! Mrs. Brewster!
Mrs. Brewster! Mrs. Brewster!
Charlie's mother.
Amy.
Charlie.
Charlie.
Peter.
Charlie.
Dandridge.
Amy.
Amy.
Peter.
Amy.
Charlie.
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 Mr. Vincent.
Mr. Dandridge.
Amy.
Charlie.
Charlie.
Peter.
Charlie.
Amy.
Peter. Charlie.
Amy.
This is Peter Vincent, Charlie.
Charlie. Is something wrong?
Nothing. Oh, you're so cool, Brewster!
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there!